All right, welcome back. 9:20 on this Tuesday morning. It's J.R. Simmer and Hammer with you until 10 o'clock. Then we're going to take you to some World Cup action. Final games in the group stage for all teams begin today. So we'll have the Netherlands-Qatar match coming up at 10. Hopefully the Dutchies can win that one and cement their spot atop Group A. Then this afternoon, interesting. England-Wales, good rivalry. We've already got video of the fans fighting from 4 days ago. The match isn't until this afternoon our time. They were already fighting on the streets in Qatar 4 days ago. Anyway, we'll see how that plays itself out.
That's quite a shift, right? Do they do this on a nightly basis?
I don't know. Yeah. I haven't
seen the cops?
Yeah, well, they seem to be just, you guys do that amongst yourselves.
Exactly.
Whatever.
Knock each other out.
Yeah, exactly. So England-Wales at 2. Same time, U.S.-Iran for a lot of different reasons. Very interesting to see how that plays. But the U.S. will need to win that game to move on into the knockout stage. So that's the day ahead at the World Cup. Certainly Canada's match on Sunday morning with Croatia. A lot of eyes on that one. 4.4 million Canadians in terms of the ratings, the television ratings was a huge number. And largely overlooked with all the hubbub about the Canada at the World Cup was the fact that Canada won the Davis Cup for the first time ever. The major men's international team competition in tennis. So we wanted to spend some time on that. And who better than our friend John Horn, tennis commentator, tennis analyst, joining us to talk about the impact of that on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. How are you doing this morning, John?
I'm doing well, actually. The Davis Cup finished like literally moments before Canada scored that first goal. So the timing was actually quite all right. I thought they were going to roll the Davis Cup winning the title into winning the soccer, but it didn't quite happen. Started well, but didn't quite happen, as we all know.
No, unfortunately, yes. But I mean, as a guy who's so invested in tennis as you are, does it kind of cheese you off a little bit that such a major win for Canada has been? I think it's fair to say, outside of tennis fans, largely overlooked.
Yeah, I mean, the Davis Cup has always been a bit of a struggle in terms of finding its place on the calendar, even for the tennis fans, for the players as well. I mean, the players have really struggled over the past few years to participate. I mean, as you know, the schedule starts in January and it goes right through until November. They have very little time off, and it's difficult. And I know a lot of the players are torn because you want to represent your country. It's kind of like the Olympics for tennis. You know, you want to represent your country. You want the country to do well, and you want people to be proud of you. And for a lot of players, you know, outside of the majors, Davis Cup is actually a big deal for a lot of these players. Like, they really get behind it and they look forward to it. And Canada won the Junior Davis Cup in 2015, you know, with Denis Shapovalov and with Félix Auger-Aliassime. So they know how important this is. And the event's been around 109 years. And for Canada to win it the first time, it's a pretty cool deal. So, yeah, unfortunate that, you know, maybe not as many people knew about it as we would have liked, and just the way the calendar goes. And, you know, for the casual tennis fan, most people who watch tennis just on an occasional basis, they really look at the four Grand Slams, and, you know, sometimes only just Wimbledon and the U.S. Open is kind of when they watch tennis. So it kind of gets buried a little bit just because of the time of the year, and the season's pretty much over. It's really the last event of the year. It's unfortunate it doesn't get the play and the attention that maybe it deserves, but the format is cool and it's fun to watch. I'm a little disappointed that they don't get to play, you know, the home events at their home arenas. Now they've changed the Davis Cup a little bit where, you know, when you play the finals, it's always played at one venue. So it's been in Spain and it'll be in Spain next year as well. So it would have been kind of neat if Canada got a chance to actually win it on home soil and Ottawa or Edmonton, Vancouver, Toronto, and fill an arena up and have 10,000 people cheering them on. But they had a good showing from people who came to visit, so that was cool. But you're right. It just doesn't get really the attention that it probably should, and it's kind of the way it is with tennis and how long the calendar is, unfortunately.
Félix now up to number 6 in the world. What kind of a close to the season he has had, not just with this, but with winning multiple, I think, 4 in a row on the tour?
Yeah, I mean, he's had a remarkable year. He won his first tournament earlier this year, then won 3 in a row. He had a 16-match winning streak. Can't say enough good things about what Félix has done this year. Career high number 6 in the world rankings. He won 60 matches, only one fewer than Stefano Tsitsipas did on tour for the most on tour. I think he's going to be in the running for player of the year this year. Whether he wins it or not, I'm not sure, but he certainly should be in the running. He's had a phenomenal year. He went 5-0 in the Davis Cup singles. Won a couple doubles matches in Davis Cup too. So I think this is, it's kind of hard to say or stupid to say right now. This is his coming out party because we've talked about him for a few years now, but this really was his coming out year. And I think, the next thing for him is to win a Grand Slam. I don't think it's a matter of if it's going to happen, it's going to be a matter of when it happens. So we might see it next year, but maybe he can parlay this year into a good start in Australia and maybe win the Australian Open. We'll have to see.
With tennis analyst John Horn, Canada wins the Davis Cup on Sunday. So we know the Chapo battled injury, but was there, and obviously Felix clinched it for Canada. So we had our two best guys participating on the single side. I didn't track it closely, John. Did a lot of the other countries that were in the running, especially toward the end, did they have access to all of their top guys, or was it a bit of a watered-down field?
It's tough to say. I mean, it was a bit of a watered-down field. This is kind of the unfortunate part about Davis Cup. We talked about it earlier. After you've had an 11-month season, it's kind of hard to, step up and represent your country even one more time at the end of the year. Players are banged up and they're tired. So I know Australia, who kind of played in the final, didn't have Nick Kyrgios. He didn't play. I know a couple of the players on Australia were kind of upset that he wasn't able to do it, but he decided not to play. So they only had, Alex de Minaur, who's a really good player in his own right. He's a top 20 player as well, but he was there. Spain didn't have Rafael Nadal. Italy didn't have Matteo Berrettini. He only played doubles, didn't play singles, didn't have Yannick Sinner, who's their top player in singles too. So, yeah, I mean, it was a watered-down field a little bit, but the one big thing about the Canadian win is that they actually weren't supposed to actually be in the finals because they had to qualify to get into the finals. They actually lost back in March to the Netherlands. So the only reason they got in is because Russia was knocked out of the tournament, or pretty much kicked out of the tournament for everything that's been going on with Ukraine. So Canada got a wild card in, and then they won their qualifying in the finals, and then they got to the final eight. So they kind of got lucky. In tennis, it's kind of the lucky loser kind of way of getting in and taking advantage of it. So, full credit for them. I mean, I thought they played really well, even if some of the teams were undermanned. But, it would have been nice to have all the top players there to put a total, legitimate win beside it, although I can't take anything away from what Canada did. They played really well and were fully deserving.
You look at Alcaraz, 19 years old, number one ranked player in the world, the Spaniard. You look at this as kind of a collision course going forward. Is he and Felix kind of a two-headed monster as a future of tennis?
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to think so. I mean, they had a couple of really good matchups this year. Felix beat Alcaraz when he was the number one in the world. After winning the U.S. Open, he was the number one player in the world, and he beat him twice after that. So Felix has already got the upper hand on him. Alcaraz is a phenomenal player, an exciting player. He does so many things well. He moves so well. He's exciting. He can play all over the court super well. So I really like his style of game. I think he's fun and entertaining to watch, and he's for sure the future of tennis along with Felix. I think there's some other guys, out there. I mentioned Yannick Sinner is a really good player. I think when Sasha Zverev gets back to full health, he'll be right in the mix as well. There's still a lot of really good young players who are coming up the ranks as well. There's a good young American core who's out there. Taylor Fritz is one of those players who's got into the top 10 this year, won a few tournaments. So there are a lot of good players on tour, and I think the Alcaraz and the Ojeda Aliassime, head to head, I think will definitely be one of those ones we're going to have to watch, and it's going to be exciting. We talk a lot about Federer being gone from the men's game, and Nadal probably winding down soon, and Djokovic still seems to be going guns blazing, even though he's getting a bit older. But I think tennis is in a really good place on the men's and women's side. There's just so many good players, and the competition is really strong. And even though the Federer, Djokovic, and Nadal draw so many eyeballs and the ratings and so forth, I think there's going to be a lot of good young players that you're starting to see come out now, and Alcaraz leads the way, and I think tennis is still in a good place.
It's hard to say, based on, again, the overall lack of coverage, what impact this might have. We always talk about when Canada does well in some sports and wins world competitions or whatever, the impact of, hey, there's a kid watching at home say, hey, I can be that. I want to take, in this case, tennis lessons or whatever. As we've seen, some good young tennis players, in particular Felix and Dennis on the men's side and on the women's side, obviously, as well. Are you hearing about numbers increasing in terms of young tennis player, people joining, that sort of thing in Canada? Is there any evidence, be it anecdotal or otherwise, to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the tennis the sport is being picked up by a lot of people. I think COVID actually helped that because it was one of the sports where people could go out and actually play outside with limited contact with other people. And other than really touching the tennis balls, there was really no contact with people. So I thought that that was a good way that people started to get into tennis and people really started to pick up the game. From all accounts, from what I've found out from people I've spoken to in British Columbia as well as Ontario and Quebec, that the tennis numbers are up for sure, that there's more kids starting to play the sport, which is great. I think it helps when you know, Felix and Dennis are showing well in the sports, and I think a lot of kids really like the way Shapovalov plays. It's sort of that guns a-blazing, you know, the one-handed backhand jumping up in the air and the roars and that kind of thing, which is kind of the opposite of what Felix does, a little bit more low-key. But I think the kids, you know, they like that kind of stuff. And, you know, I got three kids of my own, and my two boys are always saying, you know, we like sports that are fun and entertaining, and there's a lot of action. That's why they love things like X Games, and they love things where people are jumping high or, you know, running faster. They don't want the slow sports. And I think, you know, when you see good players out there who are exciting, like an Alcaraz, like a Denis Shapovalov, it kind of gets them into it, because it's not always the most entertaining sport to watch if you just pick a couple players, and you know, but they like the big serves, they like to see the one-handed backhand, they like to see the screams and the roars. That's why Nick Kyrgios gets so much attention. I mean, say what you want about the guy, but he draws eyeballs just by the way he plays and just by his emotion on the court. So I think tennis is in a really good place, and I think that a lot of people are, you know, watching tennis on TV, and they're going, well, hey, you know, this is kind of a fun sport. It's not super expensive. I can go down to my local courts and, you know, hit some balls, and you can get a racket at a reasonable price, and you don't have to wear all whites everywhere you go anymore, so you can wear whatever you pretty much want. Just get a pair of decent runners that aren't going to mark a court and get a racket and go out there and have some fun. So the numbers seem to be up, and I think people are, you know, are enjoying tennis and watching it, and it's great to see.
All right, and obviously a great result on Sunday. John Horn, you can follow him on Twitter at SportsHorn, tennis commentator and analyst. Really appreciate the time and the insight as always, John. Thanks a lot.
No problem. I never thought we'd be talking tennis in November, but
here we are.
It seems to go on all the time, but yeah, it's hard to believe it's going to be a month away from the new season, so looking forward to that, and I'll come back on and we'll talk about the Australian Open, I'm sure.
Sounds good. Thanks, John.
All right, guys, thanks.
There's John Horn joining us in the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. Gabriel Pizza, the official pizza of the Ottawa Senators.
Yeah, and it's funny as a country, JR, how we had tracked, and you go back to Mike Weir winning. I know you guys have watched Man and the Machine with Villeneuve.
I'm getting to it next.
But we became such big fans of a sport, but it was never sustainable, right? Weir won, oh, we love golf. You know, Villeneuve won, you go back to being a kid where we had pretty good basketball in the 80s and it dried up. The beautiful part of golf, tennis, basketball, and soccer now, it finally feels like it's sustainable, right? Like, that's so different. Like, we had 86, we got to the World Cup, and then it all dried up in soccer. And I think that's a really nice part now, as you look at all these different sports outside of hockey that are now getting great athletes and getting attention and on a world spot. Man, we're producing, we're the new Sweden.
Yeah. Well, I think what's happening is because of immigration, we're bringing so many, you know, new Canadians who are bringing the sports that they love from wherever they're immigrating from to Canada and populating the numbers in terms of who's playing the game as kids. And then now we're seeing the results of those kids growing up and becoming elite athletes in those various sports.
Well, and you've talked about it. And we were talking about this last night at dinner of, hey, if I'm immigrating to Canada, why would I ever sign up for hockey? Like, first of all, it's so foreign to me. It's not really attractable to diversity in different segments. And at the same time, the cost is crazy. And as he just pointed out, well, okay. Now, golf, you can kind of argue the same thing. But when it comes to tennis, basketball, and soccer, man, hey, just grab a ball and go. And that's the beautiful part about it.
All right, 9:34. Thoughts on anything we chat about, as always, welcome. Text us at 12-1200. Tweet at us at TSN 1200. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll set up the day ahead at the World Cup. Talk about the Sens back on the practice ice, getting set for a visit by the Rangers tomorrow. Right here on Sports Radio, TSN 1200. Welcome back, 9:43. This just in. Updating our World Cup broadcast schedule today. Powers that be have decided that's many forehead levels above I.
Okay.
Because you know that I would go with the Dutchies.
Well, you're already... What's up with the wee stuff? Like, I thought you were Canadian for this World Cup soccer.
I only support winners.
And they only got and they got their bus there. What that's kind of cool, eh?
Yeah.
Is that the fan bus? It's not the team bus.
No, it's not the team bus. It's definitely a fan bus. I don't know if it was a already existing a bus that was in Doha that they've just painted orange, or whether they I have to think that's the case. I don't think as a fan base you'd ship a bus to another continent.
You could ship
to drive.
You ship your pants.
You can ship your pants. Absolutely. I don't know if you want to ship a bus.
Okay, Ed,
in this case,
I'm geographically pretty good.
Yes.
But what is interesting, because I can remember in Latvia when I went to the World Championship in Norway, they had all driven from Latvia to Norway. I'm going to assume, JR, and you'll call me crazy, but you could drive from the Netherlands down to Qatar if you wanted to. Could you not?
Sure. Yeah, anything
I
just, is possible.
I'm gonna have to look that bad boy up as to what kind, because I, you know, with how passionate people are, if you could load up a bus, take a little cruise down to Qatar.
I think you'd probably jump on like a Ryanair or something and get from there to there.
True.
And I think, well, when AJ's in obviously Doha right now.
Yeah.
I think he said so. He went over a week early. They went to a match in France, and then he was going up to Belgium to do some sightseeing, and then I think he went over to Greece. And then from Greece, he was going to Bulgaria because Bulgaria offered a flight to Doha or something like that. It was just, you know, researched it all. But to show you that, you know, it's just way easier to get anywhere else around continent or continents around the rest of the world than it is to fly within Canada.
Oh, my God.
I think
God.
We all recognize it's cheaper for us to fly to Europe than it is to fly to Vancouver, which is ridiculous.
It's not only that, Jared, and I used to plan trips, and you have a bit of fun with it. When I worked at the lease, I mean, there was kind of an unlimited budget, but I did one trip during the lockout, and, you know, I flew from Riga. I think I actually had trained across Sweden, went down to Latvia. Now, I flew into Frankfurt for $7. The key was I landed in the middle of the night and it was an hour outside. So you have to, but the neat part about Europe, JR.
There's no luggage.
Well, yeah, but the neat part about Europe is that everything is working in conjunction to each other, right? Like we kind of build things and then we decide, hey, I think I'm going to need a light rail to actually get people into town.
Yeah.
In Europe, it's always different. You start out with transportation.
Yes.
And then you build out.
So you're just way smarter.
Yeah.
About it.
Anywhere you want to go. Yeah. You land, you grab a train, you grab something else and. Yeah, that's just a cool adventure that AJ's on. And I haven't. Have you seen any numbers as to how many visitors go in for this thing, JR? Like, are we talking in the millions? Or
I don't think it's millions, but it's certainly tens of thousands.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
I think they. I think AJ said Argentinian fans and Mexican fans are the largest
fan bases
that have been there. But he's also talked about because it is relatively speaking close. There have been a lot of fans from African countries as well. So. Yeah. I think geographically, obviously, whatever easiest, but there are lots of Canadian fans there.
Yeah, and you also have to, you know, from some of these countries like Mexico, the amount of Mexicans that live outside of their own country. And it was funny because I kept mixing up, was I in Dominican Republic or Mexico? But I think as we were about to get on the plane, the Mexican match was about to start. And man, they had the best outfits going. Hey, they had that big hat, big sombreros going.
Yeah.
And it was just really, really
kind of speak
to
every cultural stereotype, right? It's like as much as, you know, whatever the country is, right? It's like, don't make fun of us by saying all we do is blank. And then fans of the country, in this case, Mexico, all wear sombreros to the match.
And ours would be dressing up as the RCMP.
Exactly. Well, I saw some people in RCMP
hats. I like
hats,
that.
Absolutely.
I like that, yeah.
All right. Anyway, we're going to actually switch to the bigger match at 10 o'clock is actually the Ecuador-Senegal match because the winner of that one will move on. It's expected, knock on wood, that the Dutchies will take care of Qatar, who already have been knocked out, and will finish first in the pool. So the winner of the other game moves on. If it ends in a tie, then it will be Ecuador based on a goal differential. Again, the tiebreaker, it's interesting the way they do it, actually, to emerge from the group. The first tiebreaker is actually goal differential, so goals for minus goals against. Then it's most goals for, and then it's head-to-head. So, I would think typically you'd like to go head-to-head because you want to put the onus on a side to win every single match. Head-to-head, but they do things a little bit differently. I do like the fact that they put an emphasis on goal scoring.
Yeah,
at
for sure.
One point, a tiebreaker, if memory serves, at World Cup or Euro or whatever, used to be back in the day, it was least goals against, which absolutely was like, well, okay, let's just kick it out of our own end and try to get no goals scored. Again. It goes against everything that you want to try to try to kind of sell your game is to have teams move forward and try to score goals. They finally saw the wisdom of their ways or whatever and changed things to goals for as opposed to goals
against. I thought that had come up in reference to the German squad, JR, as to the goals for and against. I can't even remember what it was. Was it a second goal they had allowed or something had happened? But they're on the ropes, right? They were
Germany.
They need to win.
Costa Rica got beat by 7 goals by Spain. So if Germany wins over Costa Rica like they should, and then Spain takes care of business against who's the other team that's in that group now?
They tried Japan.
Japan, that's right. Right. So Spain beats Japan, upset. Then Germany will get.
And I was upset that Costa Rica got a point on Japan. I'm thinking, what's going on here?
Japan blew that one. If Japan had to beat Costa Rica like they should, Japan would actually, I think, already be in. So they blew that one for sure. Okay. But, anyway, there's your day ahead, and we'll have this afternoon England-Wales to start. See how that match goes, but U.S.-Iran for a lot of different reasons. The U.S. has to win. A draw and Iran goes through, and the U.S. is out. But for all the political overtones, and in fact, an Iranian journalist asked the U.S. coach yesterday about the, politics outside of soccer, and it's kind of like, geez, Louise. But those are the questions you get asked on a stage like this.
Yeah, and as I said earlier on the show, though, a lot of people, I think, are actually cheering for the Iranian men and the team itself, but obviously not the flag and the way they were not singing in the anthem to their opener, how emotional that ended up being. And I'm curious, between the English, will we see our good friends from England and Wales? We'll be getting at it at the crowd. And I wonder what security's like in Doha for those bad boys. Eh?
Yeah, absolutely. For sure.
Probably. I thought they had also, I said to Hammer, they had a whole no-fly list back in the day for all these English guys, right? Where they couldn't get to any of the soccer matches, right?
Oh, yeah. Back in the hooligans.
The hooligans, right? Yeah, it had all been tracked. They were like, basically like a terrorism watch list for soccer players, fans, sorry.
All right, we're taking you up till 10. We'll have, again, the match coming up at that time. And then after that, Steve Lloyd, Graham Creech will take you through an abbreviated edition of In the Box, beginning at noon, going until 2. And the Sens back on the practice ice at 10:30. Get an update on the lineup. Find out perhaps who will be up and who stays up and who's in the lineup tomorrow night versus the Rangers. That comes up after our soccer coverage at noon right here on Sports Radio, TSN 1200. All right, Simmer. So Mike and Alta Vista did the work for you.
All for Qatar.
Yeah, exactly. The drive from the Netherlands to Qatar in the orange bus, according to Google Maps, 64 hours. The equivalent to drive from Halifax to Vancouver is 60 hours. So it's like driving across Canada, essentially, to get from. That's a lot of time to spend on a party bus.
That is
with a lot of. Smelly, stinky, farting people probably at some point.
That first keg of beer goes. Couple pizzas.
Just one bathroom on those party buses?
If one.
And you don't even want to go. And you go in there, too. And I did many a trips in junior hockey trying to stand up and use those bathrooms.
Well, it's one of the bus is one of those open topper jobbies like they have as tourist buses.
Right. Okay.
So, I mean, it's nicer weather there than here. So imagine, I guess if you're up top and you had to go, it's just like right over the side.
Imagine doing 64 hours on the top of the tour bus. That'd be some serious weather you're passing from Northern Europe. Is the Netherlands considered to be Europe, Chair, or Scandinavia?
No, it's Europe.
Okay.